Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Tzadi Beis. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin at the third line from the top, where the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, Niseis Alpi Beis Din, Teitzei, and it said, went on in the Mishnah to say, she must leave both husbands, Uptura Min HaKorban. She is exempt from bringing a sacrifice, a sin offering. Before we begin the Gemara text itself, we glance at the side where we have a a topic heading. Niseis Alpi Beis Din, Be'edusa Shel Eid Echad, a woman whose husband had gone abroad, and word came through the testimony of one, a singular witness, that the man died, and based on a court ruling, she went and married someone else. V'ahakach bo bailo. And then the husband showed up. L'fi Mishnah senu p'tura min ha-korban. According to our Mishnah, she is exempt from bringing a sin offering. A sin offering is that which would be brought in the case of a person who on their own inadvertently committed adultery, not realizing whom they were having relations with. They would then bring a korban chatos. In this case, that happened. You have a woman whose husband showed up, but she had married based on the ruling of the court that said that you can marry someone else after this singular witness had showed up. So this is a case of a yochid she'osa, or somach, or you could say relied, al ha'iruas based in, and hence the opinion of our Mishnah is a yochid shosa al smach ha'iruas based in is exempt from a sin offering. There's a difference between someone acting on their own and someone acting with the authority of the court. Muvah ba Gemara ayadei Ziri. In the Gemara, Ziri will introduce a brisa she soiber that holds the mikreshel isha sheniseis al pi aid echad. A woman who married a second man because of the testimony of a singular witness, afopishahoru bezdin, even though the court ruled that she can marry, a no begeder hoira, that is not considered a court ruling. U poter mikorban, a court ruling which would result in an exemption from a korban, ella tos, it is considered a mistake. There is a new halachic category that we're being introduced to here, and that is this concept of an individual being exempt from a sacrifice because they acted upon the ruling of the Beis Din. That's when it's categorized as a ruling, as opposed to something being categorized as a mistake that the court made. Exactly what's the difference between a court ruling and a mistake? So we're going to see what that is when we go through the Gemara, and maybe we'll take a look at Rashi, a distinction made between something that, when subsequently revealed, it's obvious to all that a mistake was made, as opposed to a ruling that is based on, we'll say, court analysis or court logic that may subsequently be shown to be incorrect, but the fact that it's discovered to be incorrect afterwards is not a function of something that is obvious to all around. So the issue is the woman who had married based on the testimony of a singular witness, and eventually the husband, the original husband, shows up. Is this considered an act on the woman's part of reliance upon a court ruling, and hence exempt from a korban, as our Mishnah indicates? Or is it a woman that is said to have made a mistake, even though the court may have given her license to marry the second fellow, it's not a function of a court ruling, but rather a mistake. And if a mistake is made, so then a person has to bring a personal sin offering. The Gemara. Omar Ze'iri. And we've highlighted the names Ze'iri and Rav Nachman with a double underline. And on the, under our Mivneh heading, on the side of the Gemara, we indicate Cholkim. These two opinions are in arguing Im Lifsok Kimishno Senu O Kabraisa. Should we accept the ruling of our Mishnah, hence exemption from sacrifice, or the ruling of the other Tanaic source, the Braisa, which says otherwise? Omar Ze'iri. We're reading the Gemara, four lines from the top. Leso lemasnisen midetoni beimidrasha. We're not going to accept the Mishnah in face of, or rather, we will accept the Braisa taught in the base Medrash. The Toni beimidrasha. The following was taught in the base Medrash as a Tanaic source. Horu beisdin shishoka chama. If on a Saturday afternoon, the Beis Din ruled that the sun set, and you can now go ahead and do Melacha, the setting of the sun, indicating the end of Shabbos. Ulebesof zorchanen, the sun re-shone forth. Ein zu hoiro'o elotos. That is not considered a court ruling. In other words, if people then did Melacha based on the court having declared that the sun set, and then the sun reappears, the malacha done by the people is not considered reliance on a court ruling, but rather a mistake. And hence, they will be obligated to bring a sin offering. So using this as a backdrop, so too, says Ziri, is the case in our Mishnah where the husband shows up. So it's obvious to all that the testimony of the original witness and the court ruling was a mistake, not a hora'ah. And now we take a look at the Rashi on the first narrow line. Ein zu hora'ah lismoich oleo the lifter yochid she'os al piem oimasu tzibor al piem ein mevien par kishar Helam Davar. These are not examples of reliance upon a court, that when a mistaken court ruling transpires, in fact, either the individual who relied on the court or the public who relied on the court, there is a special cow offering, a par helam davar shatzibor, a cow is brought, which in order to atone for the misjudgment or the misruling of the court. But that's not the case over here. Elo kol echad, everyone who, let's say, did malacha prematurely before the end of Shabbos, everyone will bring their own personal kisva o sira, a sheep or goat offering. She'ein zeh helam dover elotos. This is not called helam dover. Helam dover is an expression literally meaning hidden, a hidden fact, a hidden matter. A hidden matter is a, in this case, a mistake that wrong court ruling. But it's not classified. This example of the sun setting and our case of the witness showing, the witness and the subsequent husband showing up, is not categorized in this legal category of helam dover elotos. It's a simple mistake. Kisvurim sheba ba'olam davar shelo ba. They thought that there entered the world a phenomenon that really had not come. Daha lekule alma galya hashta detois havoi. It becomes obvious now to everybody that it was a mistake. Va'ochanami demasnisin tozhi. So too, in the case of our Mishnah, there was a mere mistake. Kisvurim shemes. People thought he was dead. Vehine bo bailo. Here, the husband walks into court. He walks in front of us. Va'akol royim. And everyone sees. Ela a'ed samuch. Rather, the woman had relied on the singular witness, and that's not called reliance on the court for its hoira'ah. Continuing in the Gemara, V'Rav Nachman Omar hoira'ah hi. the opinion of Rav Nachman is that the woman's marriage to the second man was a function of her relying on a court ruling. Omar Rav Nachman, Teda Dehoirohi. I will show you, I will prove to you that the case of the woman's marriage to the second husband based on the singular witness is a case of a woman relying on the court ruling. She was relying on the court's ruling, and she wasn't relying on the sole witness. And how do we know she was relying on the court? In all of the Torah, we know that a singular witness is not believed. And here, he was believed. My taima, why was he believed over here? Lav mishum dahirahi. Is it not because the court issued a ruling, and it was upon the court's ruling that she relied? Now we take a look at Rashi. Teida dahirahi. It was through the fact that the court issued a ruling that she can marry, that she married. And it's upon them that she was dependent. Velo aid, and not on the witness. In other Torah matters, one witness is not believed. And here, he is believed. The Torah lo heminoso, v'heim heminuhu. The Torah doesn't grant believability to that singular witness. Rather, it's the court that granted believability to him, and it was based on their ruling that she married the second man. We can turn back to the Gemara. Omar Rava, Teda de Toshu. Rava seems to take the approach of Ze'iri in the sense that this is not to be categorized, the case of our mission is not to be categorized as a hurrah, but rather it's a case of tos. And this is a long point you can see that Rava makes now. And he goes on to explain. The ilu horu beisdin b'chelev u'bedam lehetera. If a court had ruled regarding a certain section of an animal that the chelev, or the blood, is allowed, v'hodar chozu taimo lisuranen, the court found a more convincing reason to prohibit the chelev and dam. So there was an initial ruling of heter, of permission, and then a subsequent stronger ruling of prohibition. Ki hadri v'amri lehetera. When they continue and then again have a turnaround and issue a ruling of permission with a weak kind of answer. Loi mashkechinon lehu. We're not going to listen to their turn of opinion and allow, it will remain usur. We can say that that's the reason for that is that the there was a court ruling that was rejected. After that initial court ruling of permission, it was rejected with the strong ruling of prohibition. So a court ruling, once it's rejected, it remains rejected. You know, you can't resurrect something classified as a court ruling given under, let's say, weak circumstances. You can't resurrect a weak court ruling with a subsequent weak answer after it's been rejected by a strong ruling of prohibition. Ve'ilu hecha de'osa eid echod sharina. Now we look at our case with the woman. One witness came saying the husband was dead, and we allow her. Asutre asarna. Then two witnesses come and say he's not dead, and that's stronger. The two witnesses countering the one witness is of course much stronger. We would then prohibit her. Ki hadar also aid achrina, when a subsequent singular witness would come again. This is similar to the appearance of the first witness. Here, on a second occasion, another soul witness comes saying that he's dead. That he's dead now. Sharina law. We would allow her. We would allow her to marry a second man. What does that show you about the appearance of the first witness? If the appearance of the first witness and the court's allowing her was classified as a court ruling, as a hayra, it could not be resurrected by the latter appearance of a second soul witness. And yet, here, we do accept the testimony of that second soul witness that appears. My taima. Why is this? Lav mishum detosu. Is it not because we view the appearance of the original witness saying that he was dead as a mere mistake? Something that's a mere mistake. When there's subsequent testimony concerning that matter, a mistake can be undone, so we can operate, let's say, differently. Let's take a look at Rashi. My taimo, lav mishum damrinon, eid kamo, the first witness that said he was dead, atayon. He caused us to err. Tos, atayon, he caused us to err, to think that he was dead. And then, of course, you had the two subsequent witnesses that came that said he was still alive. V'hai basro mehemon. The latter soul witness that came that said, in fact, he was dead. He is believed. D'i komai soiro hi da'adaitin samchi. If you were to say that the first witness was that said he was still alive, and upon the court ruling is that which we relied. Mechichazinon taimo al yedei hashleim halolo, deloy oirinon shapir. When the second group of witnesses, the two witnesses, come that indicate that our hayra was not a good hayra, that our ruling was not a good ruling, hechimotzinon meheder ledaitin kamais. How could we go back to the first opinion, the first stance that we had taken of permission? And yet we are doing that. That shows that the initial ruling was not classified as a hayra, but we're viewing it simply as a mistake. And being that it's viewed as a mistake, it gives room for us to then later accept the testimony of the sole singular witness. So that, just to go over the general rule, and that is that a court ruling, once undone by, let's say, stronger forces, the original court ruling cannot be resuscitated through another, let's say, weak form of resuscitation. However, an original court statement that's based on a mistake, even though subsequently strong evidence comes to counter the mistake, that original position can be resuscitated, because the original position was not a court ruling, but rather a mistake. Now we go back to the Gemara text. The Af Rabbi Eliezer Sovar de Tolzhu. And likewise, the Tano Rabbi Eliezer holds that the reliance on the singular witness is viewed as a mistake. And the result of that is that this woman who marries a second husband on based on the information the singular witness provided, when the original husband shows up, she will have to bring a sacrifice, because she was functioning, relying on the witness and not relying on the court ruling. Desanya, we have the source in which Reb Elezer appears. Reb Elezer Omer, Yikoiv Hadin Esahar. Literally, let the law penetrate the mountain. which basically means let us get to the bottom of things. Hitovi chatos shmeina, and she will bring a wholesome, a fat sin offering. Now this source was stated in a vacuum, but Rashi gives the important background. Rashi Yikov Hadin Esahar Benises Alpi Beisdin. When a woman gets married based on the ruling of the court that she can get married, and not the ruling of, not the testimony of two witnesses, Loyam Rinon, we do not say Alpi Beisdin Hu Umiftara, that her behavior was because of reliance on the court and hence would be exempt. Ella Hochin Achar Oimek Hadvarim, we rather look at the depth of the matter. We look into it deeply. V'amrinon ta'usahu, the issue here is a function of reliance on a mistake. Da'eid somuch, she was relying on the witness. V'tovi chatashmer, she was relying on the witness that said he was dead and not relying on the court. So now we continue in the Gemara text. E amres bishlamah detolshu, if you say as Rava wants to maintain, that reliance on the singular witness and her subsequent marriage was based on him, and hence it's classified as a mistake. Mishum hachi masu korban, it's for that reason that she brings a sacrifice. Eloi amres tohirohi, if you say that hers was a reliance upon the court, amai masu korban, why should she bring a sacrifice? One who behaves in accordance with a court ruling and reliant upon the court ruling is exempt from bringing a sacrifice when things turn out to be mistaken. The Gemara asks, who says that Rebbe Lozer's insistence on bringing the sacrifice is indicative of this being classified as a mistake? The Dilma Kosov Rebbe Lezer, maybe Rebbe Lezer is of the opinion that Yochid Shosabaras Basin Chayov, that a singular individual, as opposed to a public, as a tzibor, a singular individual who acts in accordance with a court ruling that turns out to be erroneous, is actually obligated to bring a sacrifice. You know, even though he was reliant upon the court. The Gemara says, no, that's not Rebbe Lezer's opinion. In Cain, if that were his opinion, ma yikoiv hadin esahar, what does he mean by saying, let's get to the bottom of things? If we look at the Rashi, in Cain, ma yikoiv v'chule, midetoni hachi, from the fact that he added that, yikoiv hadin esahar, mashma the ilo ma'inin bo shapir, it implies that if we were not to look into it deeply, lefumriata havapotala, on a superficial level, we would have, in fact, exempted her. Now, the superficial level of looking at things is, yeah, she was relying on the court's ruling, and a person who relies on a court ruling in general is exempt. But Rebbe Lezer is saying, don't look at it like that. In other words, in truth, one who would be in reliance on the court, they would be exempt. And not like the Gemara tried to deflect this by saying that Rebbe Lezer holds a private person who relies on a court ruling in fact is obligated. Not so. But in this case, when we look at things deeply, we discover she wasn't really relying on the court. She was relying on the witness that said he was dead. And because of that, she has to bring a sin offering, not as a result of her not being a person that was really relying on the court ruling. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah, Horua Bezdin Linose. The court had ruled that the woman, after the appearance of the singular witness that the husband was dead, ruled she can marry a second man. The holcha v'kilkila. This expression is what the Gemara will be focusing on. The Mishnah goes on to say, chayeves b'korbon shelo yitirua elo linosei. She's obligated to bring a sacrifice because she didn't behave in accordance with the court ruling. The court indicated she can go and marry a second man, but she went ahead and was Kilkila. Before we go in with
the Gemara, we look at the side of our Gemara under the Nose, the topic heading, Machloikis Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yochanan, Eich Lefaresh Hadikotani V'Holcha V'Kilkila. Bear in mind that when we speak about this woman receiving a court ruling, the husband then shows up. Up till now, we've been discussing a case where after the court ruling, the woman went and married a second husband. Here, however, she didn't do that. She didn't go and marry a second husband. She rather went and was Kilkila, and then the husband showed up. So what does that mean, Kilkila? So we, on the side, we've indicated this machlokis Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yochanan eich lefarish hadikotani v'ocha v'kilkila. Rabbi Elazar says zinsa. Zinsa means an act of harlotry. She went and had a one night stand with somebody. Bear in mind, of course, the husband eventually shows up. Turns out that she's a married woman having done that. Rabbi Yochanan says that Holcha V'Kilkila is a reference to a widow going ahead and marrying a Kohen Gadol, or a divorcee going and marrying a Kohen Hedyo. That's Kilkila. So now the Gemara. My Kilkila, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Zinsa, an act of harlotry. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Almona L'Kohen Gadol, Grusha V'Chalus Kohen Hedyo. Man di Omar Zinsa, according to Rabbi Elazar, that what this woman did after the court accepted the testimony of the singular witness, giving her a license to go off and marry, she went in and did an act of harlotry. So Rabbi Elazar, who holds that that's what happened, kol shekein almona l'kohen gadol, all the more so if it were a widow who went ahead and married a Kohen Gadol, or it was a divorcee that went ahead and married a Kohen Hedyot. The court certainly did not give her license to do that. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that interpreted Kilkila was that case specifically, the Almona going off and marrying Kohen Gadol, or a Grusha marrying a Kohen Hedyot. But if she were to have committed an act of harlotry, so then she would be exempt from bringing the sacrifice. My time, huh? Why? The court, after all, it gave her a heter to marry someone else. So Rabbi Yochanan explains, because she can say the Omra, she says, she has a claim, Atun, who the Shavisuni Pnuya, you, the court, made me into a Pnuya, who's an unmarried woman. And as a result, I relied on your ruling. I'm a Yochid Shesomach HaRoz Besin, and I'm therefore exempt from bringing a sacrifice. The act of harlotry, Znus, is not something that's inherently, prohibited in a strict Torah sense. Don't get us wrong. We're not allowing harlotry, but a one night fling that's done by a penuya, an unmarried woman with a man, is not something that one can easily say is a Torah prohibited. So that when the court indicated she can marry another man, the court in effect was saying you are now unmarried, and as a result of that, she did the znus, the act of znus, but that will not necessitate the bringing of a korban, because as we said, she was in reliance on the court, even though later the husband in fact showed up and she did something that's seriously wrong, an act of znus with a married woman. However, in the interim, before the husband showed up, she was relying on the court establishing her as a single woman. In that spirit of things, she went ahead and conducted the znus. Tanya Kavose de Rabbi Yochanan, a Tanaic source that supports Rabbi Yochanan's interpretation of Kilkala, Hayrua Beisin Linase, V'Holcha V'Kilkala. That's the same phrase we saw in the Mishnah, but here the Brisa is more elaborate, and this is where Rabbi Yochanan derives his support. Kagoin, what do you mean B'Kilkala? Example, Almona L'Koyin Gadol Grusha V'Chalutza L'Koyin Hedyot. Chayeves B'Korban, I'll call Bia U'Bia. She is going to be obligated to bring a sacrifice, a sin offering for each act of intimacy. The court never gave permission for an almona to go ahead and marry a kohen gadol or a divorcee to marry a kohen hedyot. So she was not relying on the court. She was acting on her own, and as such, it's then revealed when the husband shows up that she was an eshesi, she's a married woman having relations with someone else. And therefore, for each act of intimacy, a separate sacrifice will be needed. Divrei Rebbe Elazar. That's the opinion of the Tana Rebbe Elazar. V'chachomim omrim korban echad al hakol. The Chachomim disagree with Rebbe Elazar and say that it will suffice to have one sin offering brought for all the acts of intimacy that she had with that one man. Umaydim Chachamim Rebbe Elazar, the Chachamim will concede to Rebbe Elazar, to his idea of multiple sacrifices. She'im Niseis L'chamisha B'nei Adam, if this woman, after having heard that her husband was dead, went ahead and married five different men, married and divorced five different men. She'chayeves B'korban al kol echad ve'echad, each separate man that she was with will generate a separate sin offering. Hayil the Gufin Muchlokim, since she was with separate bodies, I mean separate individuals, that will generate Gufin Muchlokim, will generate multiple sacrifices. However, multiple acts with the same man, according to the Chachamim, will not generate the obligation of multiple sacrifices. And now we have a new Mishnah on the side of the Gemara. We introduce this section by the following Mikrim Shonim, different cases, Shel Isha, Shaholach Bailo, Lemedina Seyam, what will be uniform or constant through all the different cases is involves a woman whose husband went abroad. V'omru La Shemes, and she was informed that he died. V'achar Kach Chilufin, then later something is switched around, and that will be b'achar chiluf hadvarim, the matters will be switched around. That will become self-explanatory as we go through the Mishnah. Different geometric forms are used here to highlight. The triangle highlights mikrim, akshurim, libum. These are cases that are associated with questions involving yibum. And the diamond introduces mikrim, shel, eshes ish, cases involving matters that are relevant to a married woman. Once again, this will become much clearer as we go through the Mishnah. Ha'isha, we're in the Mishnah text, Ha'isha Shaholach Bailo Uvno L'Medina Sayam. A woman whose husband and son and child went abroad. Uvo V'yomrula, and then she was told, Meis Ba'alech V'achakach Meis B'neich, that your husband died, and after your husband died, his son died. Your son, which is his son, died. So you have a situation of a man who, when he died, he left a child in the world. If that were the end of the story, we would be describing a woman that would have no connection, no yibum bond to his surviving brother. And as such, she would go and marry Lashuk. And that's what happened over here. Venises. That's what Venises meant. She went and married Lashuk. V'acharkach omru lo chiluf hayu hadvarim. And then she was told that the opposite took place. Namely, that first the child died, and then the husband died. In his death, he died then without children. And as such, a yibum bond does or is present regarding the woman. But in the meantime, the woman had married someone else, an outsider. Teitse, Vavlad Rishon Vachron Mamzer. She is to leave the outsider that she married, and the the children that she has. The Mishnah talks about the first and last children, but that will be clarified by the Gemara. But their Mamzerus has been created. Now, how has Mamzerus been created? Well, this Mishnah, Rashi points out, is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva, that says illegitimacy can be the product of lavim as well. Not only relationships that are very serious, that carry with them, say, a capital punishment or the kores punishment, but even lower level offenses that are merely negative commands also can generate mamzerus. And that's what we have over here. We have a yavoma lashuk. A yavoma, this is a woman who's, in truth, is bound, has a yibum binding upon her. She's zikuka liyavam, and it's usher on a losia eshes ameis achutza. The pasuk says that the yavama, the woman who's bound to the yavam, is not allowed to marry outside, and she did. So she was in violation of a negative command, and that creates children that are mamzerim. Omru law, another case. Meis benech, v'acharkach meis balech, v'nis yabmos. A woman was told that her son died, and then her husband died. Well, if that be the case, so then her husband died, leaving no children. She went v'nis yabmos. She went and married the yavam. This, by the way, is the opposite scenario from the case before, where she went ahead and married lashuk. Here, she, based on the initial information that First her son died, and then her husband died. Well, she acted accordingly, and then did yibum. V'achakach amru lo ichlif oyvadvorim, and then she was told the opposite. What does that mean? That she shouldn't have done yibum, because when her husband died, according to this approach, according to this version, her husband died first and then the son, so she wasn't eligible for yibum. In fact, the relations with the brother-in-law would be an iser of eshes ach. That's wife of one's brother. She represents the wife of the brother regarding the yavam. And in a case where there's no mitzvah of yibum, that's an iser kores. So it's very understandable that we say teitzei, she must leave the yavam. She shouldn't have married him. V'havlad rishon v'achron mamzer. Another case. Omru la meis balech. A woman was told that your husband died. V'niseis. She married someone else. V'achakach omru la kayem hoyo umeis. When you married the second guy, your husband was still alive, but afterwards he died. Teitzei. She must leave the second husband. Look, when she married him, she, according to the latter information, the first husband was still alive. So the marriage with the second husband was an illegal situation. She's got to leave him. Vahavlad horishon, vahavlad rishon mamzer. The child that she had with the second husband during the time that the first husband was still alive, so that child is an illegitimate child. Dealing with a child through a woman married to a man, and her being impregnated by another man. That's the child that results is illegitimate. V'achron eino mamzer. However, a child that she has with that second husband at a point in time that the first husband was already dead, so she's not an eshes ish anymore. Hence, the child produced is not a mamzer. Omru la meis balech. Before we go further in this recording, I'm making a certain assumption that the term mamzer is well known to all listeners, but if you just happen to be a first time listener, a mamzer is, as we indicated before in passing, a child born from a marriage that is prohibited. And we saw Rabbi Kiva says, even if it's prohibited to the tune of a mere negative command, the resultant child is a mamzer, and such a child is not allowed to marry into a standard rank and file member of the Jewish community. He's allowed to marry another like individual, a mamzeres, and possibly there are some other choices that he has, but not a regular Jew. So that the mamzer classification is extremely important in knowing whether or not a person, who a person can marry. We continue in the Mishnah. Omru la meis balech. Woman was told her husband died, v'niskatsha. She entered matrimony with a second man, but only the betrothal stage. Kiddushin. Kiddushin is the stage at which a man gives the woman money in marriage, but they haven't consummated their marriage through a marriage canopy or intimacy. So what happened, as we saw, as we said, a woman was told her husband died, and she was betrothed by a second man. And then her husband shows up, the original husband shows up. Muteres lachsulo. She can go back to him. Afapi shenosan lo achroin get lo poslo min hakuna. Even if the second husband had given her a divorce document, that divorce document is not necessary whatsoever, and she's not she does not become disqualified from the kahuna. A divorcee is a woman that's prohibited to eventually marry a kohen, but this woman receiving the get from the second man under these circumstances, the get was totally unnecessary. As Zu Dorash Reb Elozer ben Matsya, the following was expounded upon by Reb Elozer ben Matsya, V'isha grusha me'isha. This pasuk is in the context of Kehanim, where the pasuk says a woman who was divorced from her husband is disqualified from the kuna. So who is disqualified? A woman who was divorced from her husband. V'lo me'ish she'eino isha. But not a woman who was divorced from a man that's not her husband. In the case featured in the Mishnah, the second man wasn't her husband. The first husband was still alive. We opened the Gemara with an attempt to explain the words Rishon and Achron in the context of the children that were declared as a mamzer. The Mishnah said, Teitzei vavlad Rishon vachron mamzer. What do you mean by that? Hilemo Rishon equals Lifnei Shmua. The Achron equals the Achar Shmua. You had a married woman who thought she was allowed to marry a second man. So she did. And the Mishnah makes reference to children that she had with the second husband. So if this is the explanation, the child that she had before she heard of her husband's death, and the child that she had after she heard, correction, the Gemara means to say, Ilemo Rishon Lifnei Shmua means the child that she had before she heard that her husband was still alive. And the Achron means La'achar Shmua, after she heard that the husband was in fact still alive. Well, either way, both children are Mamzerim, because we're working with the assumption now that the husband in fact was alive the whole time. Listen, Havlad Mamzer. Why didn't the Mishnah just write Havlad Mamzer? Why the emphasis on first and last? The Gemara answers, that's true. It could have written Havlad Mamzer. Mishum de Kaboi Lemisni Seifa. Because of that which appears in the Seifa, the terms Rishon and Achron were used earlier. What does it say in the Seifa? Omru la meis ba'alech v'nises. A woman was told that her husband died. She went ahead and married someone else. V'achakach omru la. Afterwards, she was informed, Kayem hoya umeis. He really was alive when you married the second man, but he has since died. Regarding children that she has with the second man, here, Harishon Mamzer, the first child that she had before the information came in that he really was finally dead, that child was born when the original husband was still alive. So that's a married woman having an adulterous relationship, becoming impregnated, that child is a mamzer. However, va'achron ein mamzer, the child that she had later, after the husband, in fact, was truly dead, so that child, if she was impregnated at that point, after the husband was, in fact, really dead, the first husband, that is, so that child is kosher. It's not a mamzer. So because in the Seifa, the distinction between Rishon and Achron was necessary, Tono Nami Reisha Rishon V'Achron Mamzer. The Reisha also used that terminology, even though in the Reisha case, there was no need for a distinction between first and last. Because in that case, both children were mamzerim. Tonu Rabbanan, Zu Divrei Rabbi Akiva. The the first example in the Mishnah, which had to do with the Yibum situation, this is a Mishnah that's based on Rabbi Akiva. Shehoya Omer, Ein Kiddushin Toifsin B'chayve Lavin. That a marriage bond does not take hold when you're dealing with a prohibited couple to the tune of a mere negative command. And as a result of the Yevama Lashuk being prohibited based on a negative command, Lo Sia Eishes HaMeitza Chutzah, the child that results would be a mamzer. So that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Avol Chachomim Omrim Ein Mamzer Miyavama. The Chachomim hold, though, Mamzerus does not result from a woman who is Yavama bound and marries Lashuk. The Gemara asks, V'leimo ein mamzer mechai bilavin. Why don't the Chachomim in this particular source state a more general principle that Mamzerus doesn't result from chai bilavin, from all negative commands? Why do they state in such a focused fashion that there's no mamzer from a yavama? That, by the way, leaves room to think that from a yavama lashuk, that a man should not marry a woman who's bound to a yavam and he's an outsider and marries her, so he's violated a negative command. But if you focus it this way by saying ein mamzer me yavama, you're leaving room to think that there is mamzerus from other kinds of lavin. So more, in fact, says, if you're going to ask why doesn't it say ein mamzer chayv lavin, because hai tano, the chachomim featured in this Tanaic source, hach tano de Rebbe Akiva hu. It really is an alternative version of Rebbe Akiva. The Tanaic source we just read opened up with Rebbe Akiva version 1, which says across the boards, there's no Tfisas Kedushin with Chai Ve'Lavin, but there's another opinion within Rabbi Akiva. And what is it? The Omar Mechai Ve'Lavin de She'er Have Mamzer. Mechai Ve'Lavin Gredi Lo Have Mamzer. Those kinds of relatives that are prohibited by virtue of a negative command. The example that Rashi cites is a woman raped by one's father, according to the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, who says that a son cannot marry a woman raped by one's father. And if one does, so he's in violation of a negative command. But that's a negative command relationship that's based on relatives. One's father who raped the woman. However, general negative commands prohibited women that are based on a negative command that are not relative related. Example being the Yavama Lashuk, some outsider who marries a woman who's bound to a Yavam. So it's true that's a negative command, but it's not a negative command of share of relatives. So that, according to this opinion, this second opinion, that does not create mamzerus. Omar Rav Yehuda, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Omar Rav, Minayin Shein Kedushin Toivsin B'Yavama. Now, we do have a topic heading with a structural note, because you see the use of a double underline. So we take a look at the side under our Nosei Mivne heading. You'll notice that Rav and Shmuel are highlighted. Shnei Gishos, two approaches, Legabi Kiddushin B'Yavama L'Shuk. Regarding the outsider who married a woman who was bound to a Yavam. The Yavam, of course, is the surviving brother of a man who died, leaving no children. Now, that outsider shouldn't have married her. What happens if he does? So, Larav, we've written on the side, Einom Toifsim Klal. There is no forming of a marital bond between the outsider and the Yavama. V'lo baya filu get mimenu. She doesn't require even a divorce document from that outsider. L'Shmuel is safkalei. Shmuel is in doubt. Now, what's the basis of his doubt? Mahu kavonas haposuk lo siya eishes hameis hachutzo liishzar. The posuk says that the wife of the deceased, who died without children, shall not marry out to a stranger. What does that mean, lo siya eishes hameis hachutzo? What is that? Im ein bo havaya. Shmuel is in doubt as to, does it mean that there is no clinching of a marriage? It doesn't. Ein bo havaya. Havaya is the verb form of to be. There is no being of marriage. Or lelav be'alma. That's Shmuel's doubt. Or is it a mere negative command that Yavoma, a woman who is bound to the survive to her brother-in-law through the Yibum relationship, if she marries outside, she's in violation of a negative command. But not that the Pusik is coming to tell me that there's no Tfisas Kiddushin. So now our Gemara continues with Rav at the top line, Minayin Shein Kiddushin Toivsin B'Yavama. From where do we know that if a woman who is bound to her brother-in-law through a Yibum binding, that if she marries an outsider, that marriage doesn't take hold whatsoever. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Lo siya eishes hameis hachutza liish zar. And Rav understands this to mean, Lo sehei bo havaya lizar. There is no marital bond formed between the woman and an zar, a stranger, an outsider. So that's what the pasuk is declaring. There is no bond whatsoever. Ushmuel amar be'aniyo senu tzricho get. Be'aniyo senu means in our poverty of understanding, that we don't know how to interpret that pasuk. We don't know how to interpret it definitively. Shmuel is in doubt regarding what is the interpretation of that phrase, lo siya eishes hameis. Does it come to teach me that there is a negative command involved? Or is it coming to tell me that there is no marital bond formed whatsoever? So that's Shmuel's doubt. Omar le Rav Mori bar Rochel Ravashi, Hochi Omar Amemar, Hilchaso Kavose de Shmuel. The halacha will follow Shmuel, and the result of that would be that the Yavoma Lashuk, when she marries that outsider, and it turns out that she should not have done so, she requires a divorce document from that outsider. Omar Vashi, Hashto di Omar Amemar Hilchaso Kavose de Shmuel. Now that has been said, and the fellow from the outside, from the Shuk, gives her a get. Im Hoya Yavoma Kohen, if the brother-in-law that she is supposed to marry happens to be a Kohen, and now she's become disqualified because she received a get. Choletz law. The Kohen does Chalitza, the brother-in-law Kohen does Chalitza with her. Visharya lay. And then the woman becomes muteres to the fellow that she had married, the fellow Minashuk. The Gemara asks, Isguri Isgar. This is an expression that means, is he to be rewarded? Im kein motzinu chotein iskar. According to this ruling, here you have a man that originally married her improperly, illegally. She was Yavama Lashuk. And now we're making a provision for her to be released by the Yavam, and she goes back to the guy from the Shuk. But that guy from the Shuk had done something wrong initially. So we have an upgraded version of Rav Ashi. Ela, im hoya Yavama Yisrael, if the brother-in-law happens to be a Yisrael, no sane law Shani get. The fellow from the Shuk that married her improperly, he should give her a divorce document. For Hutra lo, and she becomes muteres to the Yavam. Omar of Gidol, Omar of Chia, Bar Yosef, Omar Rav. Yavama, with regard to an outsider, Kedushin Ein Ba, Nisuin Yesh Ba. So Kedushin Ein Ba, that fits in with what Rav himself had said at the top of the Omid, that there is no Kedushin. There's no betrothal that can be achieved between an outsider and a woman who's bound to a Yavam. However, the second statement, Nisuin Yesh Ba, that's very difficult to understand. The Rashi, Nisuin Yesh Ba, Kosalka Dait, the Rashi at the upper part of the narrow line says, the thinking right now is, the Inyan get, the Nises Lazar, Sheomru Lo Meis Balech, if this woman who was informed that her husband died, V'achakach Benech, she was told that her husband died, and then her son. That's what she thought. And what did she do? She then went and married some outsider. And then it was told that she's still bound to the Yavam because first her son died and then the husband died. So we say that Nisuin Yesh Ba, that she'll need a get. It means if she went ahead and consummated a marriage with an outsider, she'll need a get. The Gemara asks, E Kiddushin Ein Ba, if there's no marital bond formed at the Kiddushin level, then Nisuinami Ein Ba, there's no Nisuin either. And as a result, there's no need for a divorce document. Ema, so rather we have to restate, what is Rav Gidol teaching us? Rather, Kiddushin Unisuin Ein Ba. That in fact, in line with Rav's original teaching that Lo Siyesh Sameis Chutz Lishzar, there is nothing that is bound, formed between the outsider and this woman who is still a Yavama. There's no Kiddushin and there's no Nisuin. And she departs from that outsider when it's revealed that she's still a Yavama. She simply walks away from the outsider. Another approach is to explain what did Rav mean when he says that there is Nisuin. Biznus kederav hamnuna. That if the outsider simply gives her money in marriage, so that has no effect. However, if the outsider has intimacy with her, that's what's alluded to by the term Nisuin, so then that does take hold. Biznus. Now, takes hold with regard to what? So the Iker is in the, and actually in Rashi and also in the Hemshech of the Gemara, Biznus It means it's viewed as an act of znus, and this has ramifications to the Rav Hamnuna, based on Rav Hamnuna's teaching. The Omer Rav Hamnuna, Shemeres Yavam Shizinsa, a woman who was, in fact, bound to a Yavam, and she went and had, and she did an act of harlotry with an outsider. Asura Li Yavama, she cannot do Yibum with the actual Yavam. Rav Hamnuna views a Shemeres Yavam, a woman waiting for the Yavam, as if she is married to him, in this sense, that just like a married woman who has znus is forbidden to her husband, so too the Shemeres Yavam that conducts herself in that way has znus, she becomes prohibited to the Yavam. And that's all alluded to in this expression, Nisuin Yesh Ba. The Eboy is Emol the Oilom Kidamoron Meikora. Kiddushin Ein Ba, Nisuin Yesh Ba. Now, by saying Nisuin Yesh Ba, as we explained earlier, the thinking had been that that means that if she, even though there was no initial marriage created by the giving of money, but if she consummates the marriage, she has intimacy with that individual, she'll need a divorce document. The michlifa beisha shaholach baila lemedinas hayam, because this case can be confused with the woman whose husband went abroad. And in that case, we explained that if she went ahead and married a second man, she's going to need a get from the second man because of what people might think. People might think that she was divorced by the first husband and was legitimately married by the second husband. And if they see her leaving him without a get, they'll think that married women can leave marriages without a get. So, because in that case we require a get, in this case as well, the Shemeres Yavam that has intimacy with some outsider, we require of him as well to give her a get. Let's just take a look at the Rashi. Kine Omar Meikora Nisuin Yesh Balinyan Get, that she needs a get from the fellow that the outsider that married her. That's not a reflection on a marital bond of having taken hold. Elo mishum, but rather the mafkis law below get. If you free her from the second husband without a get, osi lemeimer nami, people will come to think also beisha shalach b'ilam nisayam v'niseis al pi beisin be'ed echad. That a woman who had got word that her husband died and because of the testimony of one, a singular witness, teitzei below get, that she can leave the second husband without a divorce document. And in that case, we said, we don't want that happening because of what we explained before. But in the minds of people, the woman was thought to have been divorced by the first husband and married legitimately by the second husband. And if she leaves the second husband without a get, people think married women can leave marriages without a get. We turn back to the Gemara, and on the side we have a nosei, a topic heading. In the course of the Gemara, there's a certain sense of progression with regard to the names that are featured and the understanding of the Gemara. So the Gemara will open up with Rabbi Yanai, and Rabbi Yanai says, "B'chabura nimnu v'gomru ein kedushin toifsin b'yavam aloshuk." Rabbi Yanai opens up with a report that it was decided by the Talmidei Chachamim that there is no Tfisas Kedushin when you're dealing with a Yavama, a woman bound to a Yavam who marries an outsider. Rabbi Yochanan enters the Gemara and says, Dovar Zeh Kfar Muzker B'Mishnah. He will tell us that what you are telling us isn't really big news, it's already in the Mishnah. Reish Lakish, he comes to explain the Mishnah differently. And he says that the Mishnah is really
according to Rabbi Akiva, that says there's no tfisas kedushin with chayve lavin. But to think that our Mishnah represents an opinion that says there's no tfisas kedushin with yevam al hashuk, something that and to present that as something that everyone would agree with, that's not true. The Mishnah simply reflects the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that there's no tfisas kedushin with chayve lavin. Bahemshech, a Gemara todun b'shitas Rabbi Akiva, and the as the Gemara unfolds, the Gemara will be analyzing Rabbi Akiva's opinion legabi haknos dvorim shelo bali olam, the ability of transferring ownership of things that haven't come into existence yet. Now, how does that play a role in our Gemara? Of course, we have to wait for the Gemara to unravel. So we turn to the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yanai, b'chabura nimnu v'gomru. The word chabura indicates a group, an assembly. So it was decided upon in the assembly of sages. Ein kedushin toifsin b'yavama. And now that conclusion is based on what we saw earlier. Rav pointed this out at the top of the Yomid, that the lo siya eishes amesa chutzul ishzar, the lo siya expression means there is no havaya, nothing takes hold when an outsider attempts to marry a woman who's bound to a yavam. Omar le Reb Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan addresses Rabbi Yanai. He says, Rabbi Yanai was the teacher of Rabbi Yochanan. He says, lo Mishnah seinu hizu. Is this not in fact what our Mishnah is saying? This non. Oimer liisha, hare at mikudeshesli. And I should have been a little more accurate. It's not our Mishnah per se. It's our Mishnah in the sense of our Mishnayos. It's a Tanaic source. It's a Mishnah that's found elsewhere, but it says in the Mishnah, one who says to a woman, "Harei mukdeshesli lacha shez gayer lacha shetiz gayri," a man is a Gentile, or the woman is a Gentile, and he declares marriage to her after he converts or after she converts. The achar sheeshtachrer, if he's a slave, he says, "I am marrying you for it to take hold after I'm freed." If she's a bondmaid, he says, take this money in marriage to take hold after you are free. Imagine a man approaching a married woman and saying, I'm marrying you, I'm giving you this money in order for you to be married to me after your husband dies. Or a man who's married to a woman, and the man approaches his wife's sister, and he says, I want you to be married to me upon the death of your sister. Your sister is really my wife right now. I can't marry you when I'm married to your sister. So he says, I'm marrying you, I'm offering you marriage to take hold after your wife, i.e. my sister, dies. Ola achar sheyachloitz lech yivmech. Now here we want to take special interest, we want to focus on this, because our topic right now concerns yavoma. A man offers marriage to a woman saying, I want you to be married to me after the yavam does chalitza with you, after he frees you. Eino mekudeshes. She is not married. In all of these cases, the marriage will not take hold. And Rashi explains, since he cannot marry her now, since there's no tfisas kedushin right now, so it cannot be set up to take place after a while either. Things that can be done now, so you can stipulate, let it take place later on. But things that cannot take hold right now, you cannot stipulate that it should take place later on. This is explained in Rashi. Let's look at it together. Rashi, toward the lower part of the Rashi commentary, Eino Mekudeshes, Kevon da hashto lo tafsi bo kiddushin, since right now there would be no tfisas kiddushin. So likewise, afterwards, it can't take hold. Let's read that again. Kevon da hashto lo tafsi bo kiddushin, lekame nami lo tafsi. Later on, as well, it cannot take hold. The ein odom makne dover shelov olam. You cannot transfer ownership or create ownership over something that hasn't come to be. So if it's an issue of, let's say, conversion, right now the person is non-Jewish. He's not Jewish now. So he can't create a marriage between himself and a Jewish woman. The marriage, or I say his conversion, is something that hasn't come to be yet. The case of the woman who's bound to a Yavam, she's right now bound to the Yavam. The outsider can't right now marry her. And that is, here you have a Mishnah that is in effect saying there is no Tfisas Kedushin with a Yavama. That means the outsider who tries to marry her right now, nothing will take hold. And since nothing takes hold immediately, you can't stipulate it to take hold later on. Well, you can see then from this Mishnah that very principle that Rav Yane says that they had decided upon. It might be understood that what do you need them to decide upon? Something that's already stated emphatically or obviously in the Mishnah, that there's no Tfisas Kedushin, there's no a marital bond formed between an outsider and a woman who is Shomeres Yavam. Omar Le, Rav Yanai says back to Rav Yochanan, Ilav de Daloi lo chaspa, and here we'll first offer a literal translation. He says, if I wouldn't have picked up the shard, mi mishkachas marganisa to say, would you have found the pearl lying underneath? What Rav Yanai is saying, if I didn't tell you that a decision was made declaring that ein kedushin toisin b'chayve yavama l'shuk, you would not have learned that that is what the Mishnah is saying. What would you have thought? So here we look at Rashi. Mi mishkachas marganisa ilav di amri loch. If I hadn't told you that it was decided that there's no tfisas kedushin with the yavama l'shuk, lo havis masik adaitoch, it wouldn't have occurred to you the taimo mishum the lo tafsi bo kiddushi hashtahu. You wouldn't have understood this case of the avoma lashuk as a result of the inability of kiddusha to take hold right now. So what would you have thought? Elo mishum, you would have thought the ein makne dovar shelo bali olam v'afilu yesh biyado lasos achshav. You would have thought that things that are stipulated to take place in the future, those type of stipulations, if they concern matters that haven't come to be yet, it's a dovar shel bali olam, that those kind of stipulations simply do not create acquisition, even if it's with regard to a matter that you can control right now. So that you would have said that in the last case of a man offering kedushin to a woman, saying la'achar shi'achlo tzloch yivmech, well, the yavam hasn't done chalitza yet. So the chalitza is a dover shelo boli olam. So the Mishnah ruled eina mekudeshes. On what grounds? Because of that, you can't create acquisition. If it's stipulated upon circumstances that haven't come to be yet. Even though, if a man had been mekadish her, right now, the kedushin would have taken hold. So Rav Yane comes to say that don't think like that. And therefore, if I hadn't picked up the shard, you wouldn't have discovered that very point, that kedushin with a yavam al hashuk does not take hold right now. Omer le Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish turns to Rabbi Yochanan and he says, "Ilav de kalsuch gav rabo."
if a great man, a reference to Rabbi Yannai, if he hadn't praised you, in other words, if he hadn't strengthened your position, have amin aloch ano, I would have explained this source, the source that featured a man offering kiddushin to a yevoma, and it said in the source Eina Mekudeshes. I would have said Masnisen Rabbi Akiva, that Tanaic source is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva, Diomar Ein Kiddushin Toifsin B'chayve Lavin. That when you're dealing with relationships that are prohibited to the tune of a negative command, so the marital bond does not take hold. And an example of that would be a Yevoma Lashuk. But as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, that's a singular opinion. That's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. However, as far as we are concerned, if you had just that Tanaic source, it might very well be that if someone offered kiddushin to a yevama l'shuk, it would take hold. If that were true, then there would be all the more necessity for Rav Yannai to tell us that a decision was made saying there's no tefisas kiddushin. Because as far as this Tanaic source is concerned, this source is limited to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara asks, and note that this is a question that lasts till the third line from the top of the next Omid. V'i Rabbi Akiva, this source was in fact, according to Rabbi Akiva, ki omar lo li'achar shi'achlots lech yivmeich. If a man says to the woman, I want you to be married to me after the Yavam grants you chalitza, litvesipa kiddushin should take hold. Daha shaminon leila Rabbi Akiva. We know Rabbi Akiva to have said, the Omar Odom Makne Davar Shelo Bali Olam. People can actually transfer ownership. People can create transactions, even concerning things that haven't as yet come to be. Disnan, and here we have an illustration of that. We're at the top of Tzadi Gimel Amud Aleph. Chinom Shani Oise Lepicha. A woman vows that whatever she produces will not be permitted to her husband. So Ein Sarach Lahafer. The Tanakhama says the husband doesn't even need to annul such a vow, since she is bound previously. She's bound by law to provide her profits to her husband. She can't make a vow to counter that. Rabbi Akiva Omer Yafer. Rabbi Akiva says that the husband should annul that vow. Shema tadif alav yoser min aroi lo. She might produce more than the husband has coming to him. Regarding that extra amount, so that in fact she's not bound to provide to him. And if the vow is maintained without his annulling it, that extra will be prohibited to him. But what do we see from this example? We see that Rabbi Akiva is viewing as a reality something that hasn't come to be yet. She hasn't produced the profit yet. She hasn't produced the income yet. And yet, Rabbi Akiva is viewing it as if it is there. So that it shows us that a person does have control over matters that haven't come to be yet. The Gemara responds and says this does not show Rabbi Akiva to hold that Odo Makne Dover Shelo Bali Olam Ha'itmar Alo Omer Rav Huna Braid Rav Yeshua. Rav Huna explained that Tanaic source with the vow taking Be'imeris, where that woman was actually saying Yikachu yodai le'osehem, my hands shall be sanctified. And the term sanctify in effect is saying off limits to you, the husband, that I want my hands to be sanctified with regard to the production, the work production. The Yodayim Isnu Ba'alma, since the focus of her vow was on not the profit per se, but the focus of the vow was on her hands. So her hands are around. It's Isnu Ba'alma, they are around. And as a result of this interpretation, Rabbi Akiva will be of the opinion that Ein Odom Makne Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam. And as a result of that, this is, of course, is our response to the question. The question having been, well, if the source were according to Rabbi Akiva, shouldn't the example of Lachar Shiachlotz Yivmech yes take hold? We answer no. In order for that to take hold, you'd have to say Odom Makne Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam, the chalitza not having taken place yet. That's a Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam. But Rabbi Akiva, in fact, will tell you that Ein Odom Makne Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam, and therefore such a condition of being married to me at a time after the chalitza is done, it doesn't take effect, and that's what the source said, Eino Mikudeshes. And by saying that, of course, we're able to preserve Reish Lakish's approach that said that that source was in accordance with Rabbi Akiva. Upliga de Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. That which we said just now, that Rabbi Akiva represents an opinion of Ein Odom Makne Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam, this approach is at odds or differs than Rav Nachman's approach. The Omer of Nachman Yitzchak. He now is going to list off a number of great rabbinic figures that follow Rabbi Akiva in saying that Odom Makne Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam. And here we have to highlight Rabbi Akiva. His name will be dashed, underlined a little bit later, along with the phrase of Odom Makne Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam. So according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Rabbi Akiva is associated with the stance that a person can transfer ownership, can create transactions concerning things that have not come to be yet. In English, in the financial markets, you might classify this as the realm of futures. Let's read this now in the Gemara, the list, and with that we'll end our shiur. Upliga de Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, as we said. Truth be told, that this is the beginning of a very long point, but just to finish this particular idea, we'll read the next couple of lines. As we said, positioning Rabbi Akiva as holding Ein Odom Makne Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam is at odds with Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak's approach. The Omer of Nachman Yitzchak. Rav Huna kerav, v'rav kerab Yanai, v'rab Yanai kerab Yichia, v'rab Yichia kerabbi, v'rabbi kerab Meir, v'rabbi Meir kerab Elazar ben Yankiv, v'rab Elazar ben Yankiv kerab Akiva. Each one follows his predecessor, ultimately leading up to Rabbi Akiva, that say the Omar Odom Makne Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam. A person can transact something that has not come to be, hasn't entered the world yet. What the Gemara will do, but it's beyond the scope of our Daf Yomi structure, is present each one of these names together with the relevant point of being able to transfer something that has not come into the world. So you skim ahead, you can see Rav Huna and Rav and Rabbi, all of them are going to be describing a situation where there's a transferal of ownership or a new state is gained over something that has not come into the world yet. Dovar Shelo Ba'ali Olam. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.